And now it's time for the Wildside News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
The trouble with being right these days is that it seems the lessons are so hard to learn. Case in point, British Petroleum, otherwise known as BP, that green oil company that controls all of our oil coming to us from Alaska, just turned off the spigot. Seems the pipes are corroded. So this just goes to show you that they were wrong when they promised us the pipeline was guaranteed safe. Remember? It's time we never forget. And Wolverines and the tug of war for some little electric cars, it's all coming up when your Voice of the Earth returns here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
In Pasadena, California this week, there's a standoff that should be a movie. Seems Nissan Motor Company invented some little electric cars, which they leased to the city, and now they want them back. And Pasadena says, hey, not so fast. Sound familiar? No. It's not a review of the movie. It's the real thing. We interview Pasadena's mayor in our first segment. Then, it's up to Alaska, as we take a walk on the wild side of Wolverines, with the Jane Goodall of Gulo Gulo, Wolverines, one of the world's most elusive and least studied large mammals. And then in segment three, it's BP, British Petroleum's sudden whack to their good friend and ally, the U.S., which translates as us. What is going on? We'll find out as we launch another great edition of your Voice of the Earth. But first, the news. The fallout from the sudden shutdown of the Alaska oil pipeline by British Petroleum is still being sorted out, following reports from field workers of yet another oil spill along the pipeline and fears that the extensive corrosion bringing on the ruptures could result in a potential catastrophic spill. BP began a 5-day shutdown of the oil, which represents 8% of U.S. oil consumption. BP states that the closure is expected to last 2 months, during which sections of the pipeline will be replaced. As yet, the full impact of the oil shutdown has not been reflected in higher oil prices, although some analysts predict the possibility of $100 per barrel prices if the shortage continues for too long. West Coast refineries, which process about 2.7 million barrels per day of oil, will be most affected by the oil fields shutdown. But the full impact of the supply cut is not likely to be felt for about 2 weeks, analysts say. Mexico and Saudi Arabia are discussing increasing production to make up for the shortfall. We'll be covering more on this story during segment three of today's show. About 2,000 residents from both sides of the U.S.-Mexican border have been evacuated around El Paso, Texas, as heavy rains threaten the stability of a nearby dam in Mexico, which would cause flooding in the area. If the dam ruptures, its waters would rush into the neighborhoods in South El Paso and North Juarez. Fully 25% of the evacuees retreated to El Paso's convention center. The heavy rains that have brought on this crisis come as a relief to the area, which has been suffering from an extended drought, as barely 1 inch of rain has fallen since the first of the year. The U.S. Air Force is using its weather tracking planes to take a closer look at a strong tropical wave heading into the Windward Islands and moving 20 to 25 miles per hour. The wave has not yet formed into a tropical storm, which would impact the Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico in the next few days. Forecasters cannot say whether the storm may head into the Gulf of Mexico. Fear of Gulf hurricanes, which could disrupt U.S. oil and natural gas production, add fear to the existing shortfall due to the Alaskan oil pipeline shutdown. If the storm matures, it will be called Debbie. As the full moon looms in the evening sky, residents in the Philippines have been evacuating around the active volcano Mount Mayan in the province of Albay, as legend and science combine to warn residents that full moons often add enough extra pull on the Earth's crust to bring on a full eruption. It's a sign of the times, as Inuit people in a village of 2,000 in northern Quebec, Canada, are installing air conditioners in this area that for centuries was known for its igloos. But with the general rise in temperatures that seem to be more pronounced in the very northern climes, temperatures have reached as high as 88 degrees in July. The Inuit built airtight houses to keep out the cold, which works against them when they want to create circulation. Peoples around the world are having to literally change their cultural and traditional ways to accommodate the changing weather patterns, not to mention how they will generate the extra money needed to pay the electric bills. And that's the news. So now we're off to the home of the Rose Bowl, the romantic LA community of Pasadena, where a strange story unfolds. Well, one of the hottest movies out there right now, believe it or not, is Who Killed the Electric Car? It's making a lot of news, and as BP is shutting down oil to the United States, these issues about our gas prices and the energy future of America is really hitting us right upside the head. And so this issue of the electric cars is becoming very exciting, and a couple of weeks ago I even got test driving the Tesla electric car, which was an amazing machine. But, you know, electric cars have been around for a while, and that's what makes this particular next story very important. Joining us from Pasadena is the mayor of Pasadena, Bill Bolgard. Bill, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Sydney, it's a pleasure to be with you.
Thanks. Well, interestingly enough, your timing in terms of this particular story couldn't be better because it's so much a focus, electric cars, and the city of Pasadena finds itself right in the middle of a tangle right now concerning some of these early electric versions, electric cars. Why don't you give us a history on that?
I'd be delighted. Pasadena for the last couple of years has been using a fleet of experimental electric vehicles manufactured by Nissan under a lease arrangement where we expected at the conclusion of the lease to be able either to extend or to purchase the vehicles if they proved to be satisfactory. They've worked very well, being used by our municipal utility employees, the employees down at the Rose Bowl, and some of the staff members at Art Center, College of Design, which is conducting studies of automobile and transit and what the future holds in terms of automobile and other kinds of transit vehicles. We want to keep these vehicles in Pasadena as part of our ongoing commitment to sustainable practices and policies for our community. Nissan has until now indicated that they must have the vehicles back. They have a significant liability associated with these vehicles because of disposal responsibilities involved in electric batteries. And Pasadena has decided, with the help of Plug In America, the organization that has been raising the issue of whether electric vehicles are being suppressed in our economy because they will ultimately compete perhaps effectively with gasoline-powered vehicles. And we're wanting to take a stand on this and see if there isn't a way in which Nissan can come to agreement with Pasadena to continue to make these vehicles available either by lease or by purchase.
Now, you did sign a contract, and I know that you're having that reviewed by your staff now, the contract, to see if this opportunity for you to either somehow manage to keep them yourself if you found them desirable. Have you determined if that's in your contract at this point?
I don't have the results of our city attorney review of the lease at this point. I would think we'll complete that review this week. Meanwhile, we're making certain that the vehicles are not removed from city property as the matter is evaluated.
Well, what's interesting is the fact that there was a bit of a, I won't call it a standoff because I don't want to be provocative, and I don't think you do either. I know you don't. But apparently Nissan had determined that it was time to pick up the cars. And some trucks appeared. I don't even know if you were informed that they were going to be coming to do this, but give us an update on this. This just happened in the last couple of days.
Well, it did, and the history was that on Monday evening at our regular council meeting, a representative, one of the co-founders of Plug-in America, appeared before the council in a session which is not only public but broadcast to the community through cable television. They offered to assist the city in this effort in promoting public awareness widely of what was going on and seeing if that wouldn't have an impact on Nissan's thinking. The very next morning, representatives of Nissan showed up at the city yards to pick up these vehicles, which had been waiting for pickup over a number of months. No prior notice to the city was provided about this, but good fortune occurred because there was no direct access to the vehicles available. That there were other cars parked around, and when they were our staff people were asked to move the cars, they immediately checked with the city manager's office, who said, well, we wouldn't be releasing these vehicles until our review of the lease has been complete.
Well, that sounds like a moment right out of a movie.
We've got a plot line going.
Well, there is. I mean, I'm trying to visualize this because you have these. I mean, typically the guys that come to pick up cars, they come with big trucks and they're ready to just take them away. That's their mission. But at the same time, I can see where a city employee, I mean, suddenly goes, wait a second, who are these people and why are they taking these cars? It's my job to make sure that that we follow procedures. And it sounds like that sort of is kind of where the forces met, okay?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it was wonderful that the council had the opportunity to hear about Plug-in America's offer to work with the city the night before, because when that occurred, it was clear to me as chair of the meeting that there was a good deal of interest among council members. And since then, council members have been quoted in news reports as saying, yes, Pasadena intends to be a progressive city. We intend to be committed to green, sustainable policies, and we want these vehicles to be a part of that program.
How are you communicating? Who are you communicating with at Nissan, and how are your discussions progressing?
To my knowledge, there has been no communication directly between the city and Nissan since Monday evening or in recent weeks, including since Monday evening when this question got raised publicly at our weekly meeting, as I mentioned. As far as the city is concerned, I think we'll complete our review of the lease. We'll talk a little bit with Plug-in America about what kind of a program they might want to suggest to the city to create more public awareness of this. And then the third step, and it would be soon, would be to have some communication initiated by the city with Nissan indicating to them what we would like to do.
You like these cars. The city likes these cars. You have every reason to want to keep them. So what is standing in the way? Why? I understand kind of the liabilities and things that Nissan has to protect themselves legally as well. But where do you find some compromise? How do you expect you may be able to overcome their concerns and yours and be able to keep these vehicles?
Well, obviously, we do wish to operate within a commercial framework. Depending on exactly what the lease provides, that would be the starting point. But we would say to Nissan that if they have concerns about liability or for disposal of the batteries when they are no longer usable, that we'll assume that responsibility. We'll indemnify them from the losses that they might otherwise incur by reason of any injuries or damage that results from these batteries, so that they could go off and say to their board that they've done an action which is responsible from a fiduciary point of view. Until we know exactly the motivations that they have for asking for these vehicles back and informing us that they intend to destroy them. It's a little hard to be more specific in our strategy, but they have indicated that 5 to 7 years from now, they would certainly be in a position to offer us other electric vehicles. The obvious question is, 5 to 7 years in an economy where things get developed and delivered to the marketplace in weeks and months, and I think automobiles these days are being delivered to the marketplace within 2 years after conception.
Well, the Tesla Motor Company, actually, the initial thought happened 3 years ago. It took them a year to raise the funds, about $60 million, and at that point they started to construct this amazing car. Which,
interesting.
It took 2 years to roll the car out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a car that competes with Ferraris and Porsches.
Well, I did see a news report on that in recent days. It's not a people's wagon. As I recall, the purchase price was in the range of $80,000 or $85,000.
That's exactly right. But you got to start somewhere.
Exactly right. No, that obviously was a very high performance vehicle with a tremendous style attractiveness in that regard as well.
And their mission is to make this convert this into a people wagon in a number of years. But making the point that you're making actually is that it shouldn't take that long. So then this kind of begs the question. I mean, it seems as if you make a reasonable counter proposal that we will indemnify you and resolve you from your concern, that you should be able, I mean, in any sort of normal business dialogue, that should seem reasonable. But the sad part is the fact that if you aren't able to come to terms, then they're going to take these cars and destroy them. And I guess from my perspective, I wonder, why are they doing this?
Exactly right. And you know, what kind of pressures, not of a business nature, but, well, in the business context, maybe from, their major stake in an industry that has been governed by the internal combustion engine, what kind of pressures they feel or are receiving from other players in that complex of economic interests to fail to exploit the potential of this new technology.
You know, I really try to be fair. I'm not an anti-corporate person. I'm very much involved in corporate things. But we're reaching a point where you kind of say, what is this strange war that's happening between certain forces within the corporate world and people? Whole communities, including at this point, it has to do with America and our, the United States. Something isn't making sense here, because if we continued on this path of total reliance on oil, we are absolutely cutting our own throats, potentially. Look at what's happening with BP. Look what's happening in the Middle East here. Not only that, but as well, the issue of greenhouse gases. The sooner that we can become energy independent and transform, what in the world is going on between the global corporations and people like yourself and your community and me and my friends?
Well, the world is increasingly complex and uncertain and fast changing. There's no doubt in my mind that all of the opportunities to do things sensibly, not only economically but environmentally efficiently, need to be explored, because we don't really know what the outer perimeters are of our resources in the world. And to me, a diversified program for mobility, for vehicles, is so logical that we should be turning the world upside down to achieve that situation.
Well, you know, it costs a lot to run a city, part of that being just your fleet. How many vehicles do you have in your fleet?
Frankly, I don't have a correct number in mind, but I can assure you there are several hundred vehicles that are used by our Public Works Department, by our municipal utility, which serves, some 55,000 customers in the city, and all of the other staff persons who run around to service sidewalks and sewers and other municipal amenities around this community. There are hundreds of vehicles, and we have made a commitment to experiment with new technologies in this regard so that we can be become knowledgeable, and we can become a positive force in the right direction.
How is the increase in energy, specifically fuel, affecting the city's coffers?
The city is probably in a better position to deal with these petroleum costs, gasoline cost increases of the last year or so more successfully and with less pain than many small business operators who find that the cost of gasoline is a major factor. But obviously, to the extent that we spend money for gasoline because of these incredibly high prices as compared with historical prices for the product, that means that we have less resources available to provide other important services to our community.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's municipalities like Pasadena that can take on these experiments with in cooperation and partnership with the Nissans and the Toyotas and Fords. You have big coffers and lots of people, and you're required to drive. And I don't know, it's a nice partnership. It truly is.
Well, thank you. I think it's true that in addition to having an enterprise of some size and talented people and the finances needed to keep them operating, we have a constituency out there that expects us to do thoughtful things, to use resources well, and to advance the cause not only of individuals but of the community and of society as we face new situations.
Well, let's get back to drama and excitement now. So what do you expect may be happening in the next days, weeks, months?
Whether there will be any dramatic events relating to these vehicles in that time frame, I don't know. Maybe we'll just continue to hold them and make certain that they're not released. And then it's my hope that with the help of Plug-in America, we'll formulate a position both for dealing with the general public and with Nissan to convey, and we will do that perhaps directly with Nissan in the first instance to see what their reaction is, and then as necessary or appropriate and helpful, we'll speak more broadly to the community about the values and the concerns that we're trying to address.
We're talking with Mayor Bill Bulgard of Pasadena. You know, with all the press that this is going to receive, I can expect that you're going to find people showing up in the city. I do think that people have a right to stand up and protect ourselves, our future. What we're talking about here is I actually think it's not only a right, but at this point it's almost a responsibility for us to take a stand for sustainability, energy security, and economic security. And this is only going to happen when we start making real, proper, right decisions. And sometimes it does take a little bit of a standoff. I just have every reason to believe that people will probably end up coming to Pasadena and showing their support.
Well, thank you. I hope that's true. If we find ourselves in need of that support, I could not be more proud if Pasadena ends up serving as not only the catalyst for retaining these vehicles for our own local use, but also for activating other communities and other people to think in positive terms about these new technologies.
That's actually a very bold stand for a public official. I take my hats off to you. Well, good luck. We'll keep informed. I hope we can have a chat again here. And personally, I hope you get to keep those vehicles.
Thank you very
much. Because they serve your city and offer an alternative, actually a mainstream alternative, which is what we absolutely have to have. Hold out for what's right.
Very good. I thank you for your interest, Sydney, and would be delighted to talk with you soon again.
Thanks so much.
Very good.
Good old democracy may still have a chance. We just need a lot more Mayor Bulgards across the country to speak up for America's real future. Good luck, Pasadena. America is on your side. Well, it's time we sidle on up north to Alaska to find out about one of the most legendary tough guys of the tundra. While you wait for the Wild Side News to return, I want you to write down 10 things you know about wolverines. We'll be right back.
Melting polar ice was a dirty look. Shrinking glaciers, a nudge. Then dying coral reefs pushed us, hard. Rising ocean temperatures and extreme weather, an uppercut. Then record-breaking heat waves hit us right where it hurts. Has it occurred to anyone that maybe the Earth is trying to get our attention?
We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. To find out how, go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.